So who are we going to talk to?
We are going to be talking to Jenny Chu, who's a Portland-based writer and I would think kind of like community activist, I guess.
How you know her?
I do know her.
How do you know her?
I know her because she used to, I don't think she's no longer involved now, but she used to do a literary press, and it was interesting because they pressed their work. They published stuff on like tote bags and on t-shirts and on v-necks, so they didn't actually use the printed page. They used the moving body in cloth.
Is that a word?
I think that's a word. In cloth? Okay, well, they printed poems on t-shirts and tote bags and v-necks. So they had like a contest, and I submitted a thing, and they print it.
I love enclothed.
Enclothed?
It's encased, but with a cloth.
I think that's a word, though. Maybe. I mean, I'm not a...
Well, you're a writer.
Did you see that movie, The Phantom Thread?
No.
Well, it was all about... I mean, it was a Paul Thomas... It was supposedly Daniel Day-Lewis's last movie, and he was a... I don't know. What do you call the people who make clothes?
He's a jerk, is what I heard. He was like a jerk for 2 hours.
Yeah, he was a jerk. It wasn't my favorite film, but he probably would know that the word enclothed exists.
But that's not what you call people that make clothes, jerks.
I mean, I don't know if I'd go that far. I'm not anti-cloth merchant. But I know Jenny, so she did that for a while. They printed one of my poems on their thing. I also know her a little bit because from the nonprofit community, she's worked at Literary Arts. She's worked at Right Around Portland. She's someone who I have at various times kind of reached out for basic knowledge about how the world works, specifically in terms of nonprofit things. But also, yeah, I consider her a friend.
I heard she also dances.
She said that she's in a hip hop dance troupe, or no, she's in a class, a hip hop dance class. Yeah. We've jawed about music before and writing, actually. The poem that they published by me was called Poem for Bjork. So it was on t-shirts and I think tote bags, but we talked about, that's kind of one of the reasons why. We talked a lot about Bjork back in the day. I believe we talked a little bit about it, maybe a lot's overstating it, but she's into music. She's heard music.
Well, that's good. Well, should we just go into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Here's Jenny Chu with us. Welcome to the steer. Is that good?
That's good. That's really kind of like...
A good intonation?
Well, I don't mean on the air, but I just mean in general because... Well, whatever, yeah.
It's not working. I mean, I guess it's not super... We can,
but it's discombobulating.
It's a little disorienting, but that's fine. I feel like it's okay. It's okay.
What is the hip hop thing though? I mean, did you take it on a whim or was something that?
Well, I love to dance, and I don't do it as much as I should. And my friend was like, "Let's take this '90s hip hop dance class."
Who does it? I mean, how'd you enroll? What?
Oh, it's just through PCC.
Oh, it's a PCC class?
Yeah, it's a PCC class.
I'm going to be teaching at PCC.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. 90s hip hop class?
I will not be teaching that. You go, how often is it?
Every Friday night. It's fun.
Which campus?
Southeast.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then, so 90s hip hop dancing is, how would you describe that?
Bouncy
compared to aughts hip hop dancing.
I mean, for example, like some of the hip hop stuff now is like the b-boy and the b-girl stuff is so tight. This is like real, like it's real hoppy, you know, like you're hopping and you're jumping and like you're doing the running man.
Oh, so it's very active.
Yeah, it's really active.
And then you listen to 90s hip hop while doing
yes.
Is there bad language ever?
I don't know if I notice.
Well, some hip hop. Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
How many people are in the class?
Like 5.
Oh, so it's not like big.
No, it's not huge. Yeah, I mean, we probably, if everyone came, it would be 7. But I feel like 5 people consistently come. Yeah.
Okay.
It's good. It's good.
And then your first public performance is this Friday?
Yes, it's this Friday.
Where's it at?
Not telling you.
Oh, you can't. I mean, it's public. Well, I could probably find it on.
No, I don't think it's public, actually.
Oh, so it's not. Well, then that's different. It's just like a class performance?
I think it's literally like an adult dance. I mean, we're like, it's an adult dance recital for our friends and family only.
Would it help if I say that this will air after the performance?
Yes.
Okay. So where is it happening?
Well, no, because I don't want you all to show up randomly.
Oh. It's choreographed?
Yeah, it's choreographed.
Oh, damn. So this is kind of work.
Yeah, it's work. It's work and it's embarrassing.
Could you fail it? Could you fail the class?
No, you can't. No, we don't take this for credit. We take it for joy.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm dancing this Saturday. There's a part that I'm not very good at. No, it's on Saturday. So the class is on Friday, and then we're performing on Saturday.
Yeah.
And there's a part that I'm not very good at yet, and I was like throwing a tantrum.
So did you pick a song for it?
Yeah, we picked one together.
Is that a secret too, or?
No. So we're doing a part of Sierra's Level Up, which is not 90s, but there's a section right at the beginning.
Okay. Who say the song again?
Sierra.
Oh, Sierra. Okay.
Yeah. The song Level Up.
Yeah.
We could play it right now. But so we're doing a part of that dance sequence with this other, I think with Poison.
Poison, Brett Michaels Poison? Every rose has its thorn.
No. Poison. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
What's the...
I know a lot about music, Jeff.
I believe you, Sonny. A quizzical look doesn't mean that you are. What song is that, though?
It's a 90s song that all the cool people listen to.
Oh. Poison. Oh, is that Bill Biv DeVoe?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. Well, you're right. I apologize. Where are you from originally?
Portland, Oregon. Grew up on the west side of town, yeah. Super white suburb.
Super white suburb.
Mm-hmm.
And then what did your parents do growing up?
So my parents immigrated over. My mom came from Saigon during the fall. And then my dad immigrated over from Hong Kong. But they both worked I think my mom started out as a seamstress. And my dad had worked in kitchens, I think, his whole time here. And my mom did like bartending. She did like some electronic assembly line work at Epson.
This is all in Portland. They moved to Portland.
Yeah, this is like, well, this is Oregon. So okay. I actually grew up in Hillsborough.
Okay. Well, so very close to Portland. Yeah.
Yes. Well, ish. And then moved to the suburbs of Beaverton like when I was 12.
Okay.
And then by then it was like my parents had a restaurant and I'm actually doing this project with Seattle-based poet Jane Wong called this Restaurant Babies Project.
Mm-hmm.
Because I grew up with my parents running a restaurant. And my mom actually... So my parents took ownership over this, like, basically this, like, steakhouse prime rib joint at the Hillsborough Airport called Eddie Rickenbacker's, which is the World War One or Two... Well, it's a World War One fighter pilot. Totally not Chinese at all, and ran this restaurant, you know, for years. And so I've been doing, I'm like basically getting photos and information and trying to write this piece for this Restaurant Babies Project. And my mom came by and dropped off all these photos, and they're just of all like white people and like none of us. Which
photos that she herself took or the photos?
Yeah, well, like of the restaurant, of like, the, you know, like clientele. Holiday parties. Okay. Yeah, like holiday parties. Also, you know, people that worked there. And I'm just like, who are all these white people? And then realize that it's just so indicative of my growing up here. So that just happened today. She just dropped off like a whole stack of photos, and I was so excited thinking that there was going to be pictures of us. And it's not. It's just like of all these people I don't even know.
But you guys aren't. I'm sorry. I don't know if you have brothers or sisters.
I do have a little brother.
And you, the two of you aren't anywhere in the photos?
No. Oh.
Were you?
Well, because we were like kind of in the back, right? Because one, I worked the restaurant. But only during closed hours, because of course it's illegal to have your to have your 12-year-old like filling the ice behind the bar. That was actually when I first tried my first taste of alcohol.
At 12?
Yeah, I looked at the Goldschlager. You know, Goldschlager has flakes of gold, and I was like, that one. Yeah. And I tried it.
Wow.
You took like a chug, or you just took a sip?
I just took a sip. I was like,
Did you get intoxicated?
No, but I was like, that tastes like cinnamon. Or whatever.
I haven't had Goldschlager in a hot minute, but when was the first time you had alcohol?
First time I had alcohol? Yeah. Like high school. The first thing I had was, what was it called?
Zima.
Yeah, it was awful. But I remember being so happy just because I was like, we're finally drinking.
Yeah.
It's very embarrassing.
That's okay. I didn't really start drinking until I was 17, though.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I just saw the gold flakes and I was like, what is this?
Oh,
it's like Constellation in a bottle.
I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, it's okay.
I just remembered I lied.
Don't ever lie on this show.
I did it. First time I had alcohol, I was like 4.
Gosh.
Whoa.
Yeah. This is too much of a big story, but just to make it short, I was in a foster home and my dad came to pick me up because he could still visit, and he thought it was so cool to be with his bottle of wine drinking, and of course I thought, oh, that looks so cool, and I was trying to impress him, so I grabbed it and took a slug.
You remember that?
No, I just know that when I came back, the foster parents were like, thought I was acting kind of weird, and they asked him and he thought it was funny, so he told them what happened. Yeah, that gives you an idea of how responsible he was.
A 4-year-old, yeah, that's young. Yeah.
Anyway, that was my story.
So then you remained in foster care.
I did not go to him.
So you restaurant, and then is Jane Wong's, is obviously her parents owned a, or she worked in restaurants? Okay.
Well, no, her parents owned a restaurant.
Okay, yeah. So that's the nature of the project.
Yep.
Restaurant babies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, did your parents, did they ever do anything else besides the steakhouse?
So I guess they actually came and had a restaurant in Pendleton when I was in the womb. Oh. And I don't, so yeah, like out in Eastern, you know, I don't even know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like, I didn't even know we were in Pendleton.
Yeah.
There was like no people of color there. So.
No.
So yeah, no, my parents were mostly in the restaurant business, and long story short, they were super successful with this weird, you know, American-run, like Chinese-run restaurant. Super successful. Like I remember I had like all the Disney VHSs during that time that were coming out. You know, our kitchen was always stocked with like Costco fruit by the foots and all that stuff. Suburban life. And then...
This is Hillsborough or Portland?
This is, at that time it was Portland, but now it would be Beaverton. Okay. So it's like up on, like by Sunset High School.
Okay.
Yeah. And then afterwards, my parents got a divorce, and then they went into the restaurant business again. And this time it was, I forget the restaurant. It was like either Lucky Panda or Happy Panda. It's one of the pandas.
Good. So one of them or both did Chinese food.
They did do Chinese food, but that's good. It's too long of a dysfunctional story to talk about that time. But then they finally split.
We've got an hour.
But they finally split, and then and that restaurant sunk them. They went into they had to claim bankruptcy for them. Yeah.
That sucks that when they were finally doing Chinese food, it wasn't as successful.
Well, it's American dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And writing, music, I mean, did they help you out in terms of that? So you're from here, but then you moved around a little bit, right?
No, we grew up, I mean, I grew up here. I lived in Oregon predominantly my whole life until I went to grad school. And I would get sent down to California for like summers to go hang out with my fam in Cali.
Mm-hmm. Where in California?
Like Bakersfield.
Okay. My mom's from Fresno, so I spent a lot of time in Fresno.
So, I mean, music, let's see. You know, my first CD was Mariah Carey, which was amazing. Daydream. And I knew all the words to the entire song. And I remember, this is how narcissistic I think children are. I remember listening to that CD and being really excited because it was like the first CD that my mom allowed me to have. And like on Z100 or something. I don't know. What year was that?
That Daydreaming came out? Yeah. I think.
When did it come out?
1995?
Yeah. So I was probably like in fifth grade.
Okay. So that was your first compact disc, eh?
Yeah. Okay. So it was kind of late. And then I remember like hearing all of those songs on Z100 and I was like, oh, I'm totally forecasting how popular all these songs are in fifth grade.
But I'm impressed when we asked you to list the music that you love, like those are things that you still sincerely love now. It's not ironic.
Yeah. No, it's not ironic at all.
I love that.
No. Yeah. That stuff makes me so happy. I think that there's something about the ballads of the 90s.
The Disney ballads or Mariah Carey or all of it?
All of it. Like the particular ballads that as like a kid, especially growing up in a really super, super strict house because both my parents are immigrants. I'm very Chinese and they're in rearing me. That it was just like fun to like belt out songs with the top of your lungs.
Was that not was that looked down on?
I think my dad yelled at me once and told me to shut up.
For singing?
Yeah, for singing. Like out in the front. I was like saving. I was singing. Like out in the front of the yard. I was like saving, what are the earthworms? I was like moving them. This was when I realized that the sun moved because the earthworms are in the sunlight in the morning. And I was like, oh, you need the shade. So then I would like move them into the shade. And then by the end of the day, they were all dried up because the sun moved.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, was.
You were singing to deal with the sadness
of
that?
No, I think I was just singing. And my dad like opened the window and was like, be quiet. And then I just kept trying to save them, but then I ended up, you know, causing more harm than I wanted to.
When you drive, do you play Disney ballads loud?
Oh my gosh, no! But sometimes I don't have a car right now.
Okay.
But my most recent adult memory of Disney was when I was driving around with my friend Philip and Maddie. So Maddie's my best friend, and Philip is a really good friend of ours. Who are both very gay men, and we just drove around belting Disney ballads with the windows down.
When was this?
This was like 2 years ago.
And you still know, and they knew the words too?
Yes!
Which songs are you talking?
We're talking about, oh my gosh, all the songs.
What, Lion King?
Yes, and Lion King!
We should do, yeah.
I gotta change levels if you're gonna sing.
Oh man, that's a real thorn in my side.
No,
I was
gonna
sing.
I can change levels.
I'm
really
not
quick.
Gonna sing Lion King, but I just felt.
Yeah, like Aladdin's. Oh my gosh, all the ballads. Yeah.
Do you still watch those movies?
No. I mean, when did I? No, I don't watch them regularly. Like, I really love the Pixar movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's some, first of all, Disney is like so problematic.
Yeah.
They are so problematic.
Yeah.
And there is something ridiculously weird and joyful though, too, of that era, like the Alan Menken eras, like, you know, The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, The Lion King, all of those, Pocahontas. I mean, it's so problematic. Oh, it's so problematic. I totally realize this. I do a lot of racial equity work. Like, I'm totally aware of how problematic Disney is.
Right.
But there's something about the music and the songs that are, I don't know, there's something just like strangely, I don't know. I still haven't unpacked that yet.
Well, I think not to take away from what those songs are, but for anyone, what you grow up with, it's going to be, nothing can compete.
Yeah.
So I totally get that.
Do you have one of those? Like that kind of...
No, I'm weird because I don't... I said earlier, I don't know anything about music, which is funny because I'm helping him with a podcast where we talk to writers about music. But I did want to, I found it so refreshing when you sent your list, because usually people have been sending lists of like music that I look at, I'm like, oh, that's the really cool music that all the cool people know and I should know about it. And then I feel really insecure. And then I saw yours. I was like, oh, I know this music. I grew up with this stuff.
Yeah.
I also grew up in white suburb. I mean, I'm also white, but I grew up in suburbia and with all this stuff. So,
I mean, but you didn't realize it was problematic at the time, right? I mean,
no.
And growing up in a very white area, I mean, these were things that you just took for granted. It wasn't until after the fact that you
I don't know if it's like being taken for granted. So, I mean, here's the history, right? Like you've got, now I'm talking about myself in the third person. But you have a little girl who is being raised in a very Chinese household that's super strict. Not, you know, basically the refrain was like, you are Chinese first, a daughter second, a student third, and everything else last.
Okay, yeah. If I can just stop you, this is very naive. What does it mean to be Chinese first?
Okay, so I feel like you can't understand it unless you're Chinese.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, I mean, that's like, I mean, there's so many. So I was expected to be like super obedient, you know, to get like straight A's, to come home and do chores. Like I had been, my little brother is 7 years younger than me. And so the moment that he was born, I was basically caretaking for him and like changing his diapers when I was 7.
Because your parents are working a ton, right?
Yeah, they're working a ton, like total latchkey kid. Parents are really strict. Like I couldn't sleep over at any of my friends' houses, couldn't play outside. Like I remember this one time at my friends. So we lived in a cul-de-sac and I would only be allowed to ride my bike in a circle.
Somewhat.
In a circle where my mom could see me. And then like I had friends that lived in the neighborhood and they would come by and they would knock on the door and say, hey, can Jenny come out and play with us? And I would look at my mom. I'd always be so sad. And I'd be like, Mom, my friends want to know if I can go play with them. And my mom would just say, oh, go, just tell them you have homework. Wow. Except they were like in the same class as me. And so I would go and I'd be like, I have homework. And they're like, wait, we do? We're in the same class. What homework? And then I was like, oh, it's like extra homework my mom makes.
Would you
me
say
do.
That really?
Yes. That's and awesome. Then, you know, I'd close the door. And then my mom, you know, my mom was, she's very Chinese. So she's really lovingly manipulative. And she'd be like, you wanted to stay in, right? And I was like, yeah.
It's almost gaslighting.
Yeah. So, I mean, growing up, so my parents were just super protective and really, I think really suspicious of the world. And they would always say like, don't act like those crazy wild American kids.
They would use nationalities. They would say that really.
Yeah. They'd be like, don't act like those crazy white kids.
Yeah.
Like they're wild compared, you know? And so there was like a lot of, there was also like a lot of like expectations around not speaking out, not challenging your parents. My parents were just really, they were just super protective. So I was like always in the house. And then, you know, these cartoons, like the Disney movies that my parents approved, because I wasn't allowed to watch anything like above PG anything, provided like a sense of fantasy, right? And I think that it's not ironic for me that I really loved The Little Mermaid. And, you know, my favorite song in that movie is Part of Your World, because it was like I was always constantly wanting to not be trapped. And like, I wasn't even allowed to sleep over at my cousin's house.
Through high school?
I rebelled pretty hard at 17. But yeah, I mean, like all the way up. Yeah, like all the way up from like being a little girl to middle school to like early, you know, until junior year.
You felt smothered.
Yeah, I felt trapped. My parents were, yeah. I mean, growing up, when you see like your friends, that are like, like, you know, I mean, literally, like watching my friends play outside in the cul-de-sac when we lived in Hillsborough.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of like, oh, this sucks. So yeah, I mean, a lot of it, it's like being, and also having my parents working a lot and also being a latchkey kid. So I actually was home alone for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so TV was like a source of entertainment, right? Like, I mean, it's a little strange that I'm a writer now because I didn't grow up writing.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, did you write as a release or you mostly went to other sources of entertainment to kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I journaled starting when I was 12. I guess that's pretty young, but I never read. Like, I didn't read. Everything was like TV. And because my parents were, and also because we were an immigrant family, we didn't have a lot of money. So it wasn't like we had cable. So it was just like basic, like sure. Basic TV. There was a lot of Star Trek.
Next Generation?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's actually when I can't sleep. Still very comforting for me to watch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Star Trek is cool, Star Trek.
So you rebel, though. And then how did that congeal itself in the wider world?
Well, I mean, I think at 17, one, I was like the kind of kid that would never, I don't know why. But I just, like, didn't do things behind my parents' back. I did start smoking, though, when I was 12. And that was something cigarettes.
But how often?
Like, every day.
Wow. Really? Yeah. You would smoke a cigarette between 12 and 17 every day?
Between 12 and 27.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah, I was a hardcore cigarette smoker for a long
12
time.
12 sounds young to me.
Yeah, it's young.
Were your friends doing it?
Yeah, I got it from the skater boy.
Oh.
Yeah,
nice.
Ah, he gave me a Winston. That was my first cigarette. So gross.
And romance bloom.
No.
Yeah, okay.
No, I was a nerd.
Oh.
Yeah. No.
12 doesn't seem that. 12 is 8th grade?
No, 12 is like 6th grade.
Yeah, then I smoked a cigarette in 6th grade. Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are rebels.
And I was a burgeoning skater boy, so. Yeah. So 17.
Yeah, so 17, I really... So, yeah, I didn't do any... Like, I would always fight my parents on, like... I'm like, I want my freedom. I want to go out. I want to do these things. And then they just would say no, and, like, I'd fight, you know? And then I think at 17, I was like, this shit is never going to change. And then the moment I saved up all this money because I worked, I think it's, like...
Not at the restaurant.
No, not at the restaurant. I was doing data entry... as like an intern when I was like 15. And then I also did some like waitressing work or like some busing work. And then I saved up like $5,000 or something.
So you're
and I
pretty industrious.
Car.
I mean, this is high school and you saved up. That's yeah. Sizable.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hardworking.
Yeah. Well, I worked in high school Chinese too. I did not save my money. I bought skateboard decks or weed I mean.
Well, I mean, my parents, like I couldn't go anywhere to spend my money
on
anything.
Right.
So... Then I saved up all this money, and then of course everyone was getting their license right at 16, so I was late, and then had my learner's permit at 17, basically raised all this, you know, saved up all this money and then bought this Mazda 66.
Damn.
And then ran away the next day.
You had your license.
I had my learner's permit.
You had your learner's permit.
I just...
Where'd you go?
I was actually going to... Oh, gosh. This is like... It goes back to Disney. So at that time, I had like a secret boyfriend who I broke up with. Or he broke up with me, I think. And then I went over... He was like my really good friend's older brother. And I...
Okay.
Drove the morning that I decided to run away. I think I packed like 2 boxes of Frosted Mini Wheats. My like acoustic guitar. I was so emo. Oh my gosh, this is so embarrassing. Like
Did you play guitar? Were you playing?
I did back then, yeah.
So you knew core, I mean, you play with people or you played solo?
No. I just like learned, you know. I mean, yeah. And then I drove over to their house and I was like, Austin. I was like, come on. I was like, we'll drive to Cali. We'll get jobs at Disneyland.
Really?
We'll just make a go of it or something. And he was like in bed and he was
this
like,
this is
dude,
your secret boyfriend.
This is my ex-boyfriend.
Okay.
And yeah, but totally secret because my parents would never let me date anybody. But then we broke up, or he broke up with me. He probably broke up with me. And then I drove back over there because he was my, you know, one of my best friends. He was like the older brother of one of my best friends at the time. And I went over there and I was like, he was sleeping. And I was like, Austin, come on. I'm like, well, let's go do this thing. And
did he know that you were coming though? Or
no, I just like ran. It was like a morning.
I'm like, impromptu.
Yes, it was impromptu. It was like probably a weekday. Like it was a school morning.
Okay, so you're in school.
And so I'm like, you know, I drove over there and I was like, Austin, I was like, come on. I was like, we'll go. We'll like run away. We'll go to Disneyland. We'll get jobs. And he was like sleeping. He's like, dude, he's like, Jenny, he's like, this is crazy. He's like, I'm enrolling at PCC tomorrow.
Oh.
And I was like, come on. I was like, it'll be awesome. And then so I basically just drove. I just drove south. And I'd never been that far away. And for some reason, I couldn't pass the border of Oregon into California. So I just kept driving back and forth.
How far is that?
It's not that far.
From here to the border?
Yeah, it's like, what, 6 hours?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
No, but you mean you couldn't emotionally pass, or they physically wouldn't let you through?
No, I don't think I could emotionally pass.
Okay.
Yeah, and then...
What were you listening to during that trip?
Oh, Nirvana? God, I don't even remember. Yeah, probably Nirvana, yeah. I don't even remember. I was like such a mess.
So you were really ready to go.
Yeah, I was ready to go.
Until you hit the border, and that maybe felt like, oh, I'm really...
Yeah, I'm really doing it. I remember... Like I stopped at that turn off, whatever the rest stop is, like right before Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like slept in the car. Oh. Like I slept a lot. And like, oh man, I'm like worried for any 17-year-olds nowadays. I'm like, shit, I was like doing a lot of things that were really, yeah. I slept at the rest stop and then I drove back. And then I was back in Beaverton and I really needed cigarettes. And of course at 17, you can't buy a pack of cigarettes. So I was in Beaverton at an Albertsons, which is now like the 99 Ranch, which is an amazing grocery store.
Okay.
Came up from Cali. I think it's like owned by Chinese people. It's awesome. But it used to be an Albertsons. I picked up this. God, I was so brazen. I was like 17. And I was like, hey. You, this dude that looked like he was over 21. Mm-hmm. I was like, yo, can you buy me a pack of cigarettes?
A shoulder tap. That's a time-honored tradition.
Yeah.
I used to do that.
And he said, yeah. He's like, yeah, I can. He's like, yo, but can you do me a favor?
Oh, God.
And so, and it was like all about, so then I drove him back to his apartment. And
right,
it was
he was
like,
an adult?
He was an adult. He was like, I think like got to be like 20. He was like 23 or 24 or something.
Right.
So like and old enough to buy cigarettes.
What town are we in? We're
Beaverton.
In. We're back in. Okay.
Did he seem
drove back
sketchy?
Into I don't know. I was 17. I just wanted cigarettes. I was nicking so hard. I was like, I need some cigarettes. Wow. I'm like already so stressed out. I don't know where I'm going.
Like this is the part of the story where I get nervous.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because this is still the same day. You slept before in these places.
This is the second day.
Okay, so this is pre-cell phone. No one knows where you are.
No one knows where I am.
And then you slept. When you slept in the rest stop, that was overnight, or that?
Yeah, that was overnight. Like I think I just like I took the car and I just drove. And of course, like the timeline, like time is like so fuzzy around
sure.
this. It was the next day though, because I mean this like I still had a pack of cigarettes. When I left. So this is like the next day.
Okay.
And then I shoulder tapped this guy and he was like, yeah, he's like, I'm totally like, yes, I'll buy you a pack of cigarettes, but you gotta do me a favor. So then we drove back to his apartment, which is one, it was like the most fucking depressing scene I'd ever. We opened, it was like this tiny little apartment with this like gigantic queen sized or like king sized bed that didn't have
a mattress pad or anything.
Nothing. And then it was just like this woman. Maybe his mother, who was half naked, like in her drawers and like in her bra and her panties, like just, you know, stomach down, watching like the smallest black and white TV.
Gosh.
Super close to her face. And I just remember being there and being like, what the fuck am I doing here? And then he's like, okay, can you... I mean, he basically was using me to run errands. It wasn't anything...
sexual.
Weird, yeah. Or, like, you know. And then I basically... We ran another errand at, like, some corner, like, some store. And then I think I freaked out and I pulled an illegal Yui. Because I was just like, I just want this guy, like, out of my life. Like, I know that I have my pack of cigarettes. And wait, I pulled an illegal Yui. Sorry. Oh, no, it's okay. I pulled an illegal Yui and then the cops pulled me over.
Oh, God.
But then luckily, because he was over 21, I got off. Because
you had your learner's permit. You did not even have your real license. No. You have your learner's permit.
So that was like fate. And then I dropped him after that. And I was like, ugh.
Did you get your cigarettes?
I did.
Yeah, he got them.
Oh,
yeah.
He bought them in the beginning and then you had to drive him around.
Yeah. No, he bought them like, it was like the last, oh. I think it was the last errand. So I picked him up at Albertsons, asked him if he could buy me a pack of cigarettes. He's like, yeah, but... can you do me a favor? And then we drove to his apartment. And so I was kind of like held hostage.
Right.
And then we went to the corner store. And then that was when we got the cigarettes. And I was like in Beaverton. And I basically just like kind of freaked out. I was like, okay. Like did an illegal Yui because I just wanted to like get him home like as soon as possible.
That's
like,
very sweet of you.
Well, yeah.
Right. You must have been freaked out. I mean,
I was freaked out.
To get pulled over by the cops. I mean, that's what I meant. Like,
yeah. I mean, good. You know, I mean, that's when being like a really small Asian girl, I think it's like, you know, I didn't get a ticket.
Right.
Nothing happened. Another really sketchy thing, though, too, is because I actually did call a friend of mine when I left, like at a payphone or something. And Brittany was like, dude, like everyone's freaking out. Cause it was like day two or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, everyone's freaking out. The cops are here. Your mom
is
crying.
So this is heavy.
It was so dramatic. And she's like, your mom has been here crying. They've been like talking to everyone. And I was like, you do not tell anybody where I'm at. Like, you do not tell anybody that you've had this conversation with me.
And you were in town at that point.
I was in Beaverton. Yeah. This was like still the sort of like the same sort of like 3 day time. Yeah.
So then what happened next?
Then I tried to drive to the beach.
Okay.
Yeah. That's sort of the classic thing when you're a teenager. Yeah. Let's go to the ocean.
Yeah. I just kind of just started driving to the beach. And then that was also like another time. Gosh, I've hurt so many animals just like not being thoughtful. There were like birds in the road. And I was like, oh, they're going to fly away. But then I hit like two birds on my way to the beach. This was like the worst.
That's
I was like the worst
George
person.
George Costanza thing.
I know. So, yeah.
You remember that distinctly, though, that you hit these birds?
Yes, because I remember thinking like, oh, they're going to fly away because that's what they're supposed to do.
Right. That's the pack that we have. This whole time, though, were you still like, I want to get out of here? I mean, this is not because, you know, two days sometimes after...
Yeah.
8 hours, you're like, well, when I was younger, I had little kind of incidents where I would like quasi run away and then I would get like 5 hours in. I'd be like, oh, I want to go home. Like, but you really wanted to leave.
I mean, also like another thing in my past too, like my parents were, and I talk about this, but my dad was like really abusive and he was like really, like he was really physically abusive because I think that there's a lot of trauma that happens when you immigrate over that my dad didn't work through, and especially because he was like very Chinese, there was like no sort of like supports around mental health stuff. Mm. Like my parents like did not believe that depression was a thing. Mm-hmm. They thought that depression was for lazy people, you know, to complain about, like, because they didn't have time to be depressed. Mm-hmm. And so my dad was like just, and so like some of the things that were like, I think earlier, Sonny, you asked, like, what does being Chinese mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's, like, different like, now that I'm older and I've talked to more people, I understand that my childhood is not necessarily a blanketed version of what being Chinese means. But my parents are, like, very much, like, my dad, you know, my mom was expected to serve him hand and foot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was, like, expected to serve him hand and foot, too, because... I was the daughter. And then when my brother came, like, he was definitely the most loved child because he was the son.
Hmm.
And so, and then even
and that's
so
7 years later. So that's actually a while. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's just a lot of, there were like a lot of power, like super patriarchal, a lot of stuff that, you know, that was like really oppressive, not just because my parents were, not just because they were strict and didn't let me play with my friends. It was also oppressive because, yeah, because my dad was really, yeah. I remember my brother and I used to, and because I was older, like I'd always went out, but it's like if the phone rang for him, it'd be like, you bring the phone to dad. Now, you, and I was like, dude, he likes you better.
And oh, so you, at a young like, age, though, you kind yeah. of, oh. And yeah. This is ingrained in you, too. Yeah. I mean, when you grow up a certain way, I mean, you kind of yeah. think that that's the way it is.
Yeah. It took me a really long time to learn, especially because I grew up in a very white community mm-hmm. and didn't have, like, wasn't surrounded by other Asian folks other than, like, my own cousins and aunts and uncles. And then, of course, because my...
Were they in California or they were around Beaverton?
So my mom's family was in California, and my mom's family is really awesome, mm-hmm. and they're really warm, and I never really understood why my mom left to marry my dad, and like, and didn't really understand that, and especially because my dad's side of the family was so dysfunctional, you know, like his brothers, he had two brothers that were also, like his older brother was like even worse, like, you know, like, anyways.
So he's like a this dick, was even an even he was worse
like
a dick.
Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. So yeah, like my Aunt Shirley would come to holiday parties with like a black eye and like shit was normal.
So very
like,
I mean,
yeah,
you're not...
like super, super like it was really normal. And I knew it wasn't normal, like growing up as a little girl that this was, but had thought that like every Chinese family was like this, and then growing up in a really white neighborhood and seeing how happy your white friends are. I had a lot of, and then growing up with a dad that was like that
mm-hmm.
and witnessing that in my house was sort of the perfect storm to create like a lot of internalized racism too.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I think I was, you know, like I met another Chinese American girl, like when I was 24, it was like my partner's friend's girlfriend. And I was like, oh, hey. I was like, do you hate your dad as much as I do? And she was like, no. She's like, I love my dad. And then I was like, ding. Like, that was the first time I was like, oh, like my.
24 is kind of old. So it's I mean, old. That, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's also just what happens too. Like, when you're separated from your own community
mm-hmm.
and you don't have any other representation around you, and it feels really isolated, you know, like really isolating in your own family, especially because in Chinese culture, it's like the stuff that whatever happens really stays in the family.
Right.
You don't talk about it.
What does your brother do now?
My brother, I think, works at a warehouse. I mean, the stuff, like the sort of trauma that we grew up, like that we grew up with, we really dealt in different ways. Like, I think I rebelled really hardcore, and my brother kind of really internalized a lot of it
mm-hmm.
and he's more of a, I think he doesn't take as many risks
mm-hmm. nowadays. I mean, in his life,
I think
now.
Like ever. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He has a lot of like a lot of social anxiety, a lot of self-worth stuff, a lot of things where else, like I've just been like, fuck it. I'm running away.
Well, yes. Yeah, so we're killing yeah. birds on the way to the beach. How did yeah. that? How did that end?
I eventually had to. Oh gosh! And like back then, the gas was so cheap.
Yeah. Well,
so I think I left with like $115, and it lasted me like, you know, and I just kept driving for like 3 days. I went back home. I went back home because I had nowhere else to go, and I was so tired that I was like falling asleep at the wheel.
Gosh, so that's sketchy.
And it was like in the middle of the night, and I don't know, like I must have gotten back home at like 2 or 3 in the morning, and I was so exhausted. And my mom opened the door, and I looked at her and I said, "We'll talk about this tomorrow." And I just fell on the couch and then like passed out.
They allowed that?
Yeah, I mean, I think at that point, I think I had asserted my
independence.
Well, they were kind of like, we don't know what.
Yeah, they were probably glad she was there
with her. Yeah.
Well, yeah, in a way, they probably realized if we yell, she might leave again.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty intense. But yeah, that's my, I mean, that's my story. So I think that there's like this weird, there's this weird paradigm, right? Where it's like the Disney stuff is kind of the fantasy of it is a little bit so fantastic mm-hmm. and like so like such a fairy tale that I think as like a very, very little girl is really drawn to that narrative.
What about Nirvana?
What's I don't know. I think that was when I was getting into my brooding stage.
Do you still listen to Nirvana now?
Sometimes. I mean, I don't listen to it regularly, no. But I just remember, I mean, I remember playing like video games with like Nirvana over mm-hmm. my headphones. Like Crash Bandicoot.
Crash Bandicoot. That Cool Borders?
Yes.
Cool Borders is the best. With PlayStation, like... Sonny.
Sorry, I'm not.
You're like, I'm not cool.
No, I'm not.
Oh my gosh, not I cool want to interview enough. Sonny.
Not cool enough for Cool Borders. Ew, that was good.
Is that a video game?
Yeah, it was a snowboarding video game.
Yeah.
I used to play it while listening to Hieroglyphics' Third Eye Vision. Yeah. That's a good album.
So yeah, I mean, I think, and then, well, I mean, and that's like the flip of Disney, right? Is Nirvana and like crazy ass Kurt Cobain and like all of his drug shit and then his crash and...
Who also had a lot of trauma in his life.
When he was also from the Pacific Northwest. Yeah, and I thought he was, I mean, he was so hot. You
Kurt
know?
Cobain was hot, yeah.
He was hot with that hair. Like his... back then, the sort of 90s grunge and like the music is like still so good. Yeah. So I think that was when I was getting into my more like broody stage.
Do you listen to music while you write now?
Oh my gosh, very rarely.
So you don't, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and if I do, so what I'll do is I'll listen to instrumental music.
Okay, so.
If I'm like working, if I'm actually creating work, like creative work.
Oh, so, okay.
It's not over music.
Because you need, I mean, I'm the same way, you kind of need to focus essentially.
Yeah, or I don't know. It's like a different mode. And plus, like, I didn't grow up in a household that listened to music. I grew up in a household that had TV in the background all the time.
Oh.
So it was either that or, like, I'm really comfortable in silence. Like, I never really understand. Like, maybe on a random, if I'm feeling... I don't know, different. I might put my headphones in if I'm walking down the street, but you'll never see me with my headphones in if I'm walking.
Because you want to hear the city more than you want to hear the sun. You don't want to escape, kind of?
Yeah, because I think when I'm in music, too, it's like I'm really there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm, like, it's hard. Like, I'm already kind of, I don't think I'm a very spacey person, but, like, I definitely get into the atmosphere of stuff. And so when I'm listening to music, like, that's where I'm at. And so mm-hmm. it's a lot harder to know where I'm at in space
mm-hmm.
if I have music in my ears walking around. And I think that's probably the same as creating new work for me.
And when you say you're comfortable and quiet, like, especially when you're working, how quiet does it need to be?
Oh, it doesn't need to be that quiet. Like, okay. I can definitely tune out people.
Mm. Oh, you've been talking?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, people are just, like, yammering. I'm just like, oh, it's not. Yeah, I can tune those people out.
Like, Spotify, do you have those things now? Or do you don't even...
No, I don't. I have...
Things on your
phone? I listen to things on, like, YouTube.
Sure.
Yeah, like, I'll clean. I mean, I still love my pop music. Like, I'm just gonna admit, like, Ariana Grande, obviously, because she sounds a lot like Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just clean the house to that and, like, sing. Like, that's a really great, that's a great activity for me, is to clean and to sing to Ariana Grande or whatever thing that will allow me to belt. Some notes.
Is Ariana Grande from the same time period?
No, Ariana Grande is like super young. I think she's
like 23.
Yeah, I think she's like 21 or something.
Like right now she's 21.
Yeah, but she sounds
engaged to Pete Davidson from SNL.
That's so weird.
Is it an actor?
Saturday Night Live, that is something that you know what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now I forgot what I was going to say. I'm actually really a lot on the same page with you with not wanting music in my, and I don't understand, like, people put music on their bike while they're biking, I think is ridiculous, lot, yeah. Or just always with headphones. There's something I wanted to say. Oh, I forgot.
I want to talk about Sam Cooke, A Change Is Gonna Come.
Yes.
Because I used to tell people, I guess I still do, that
I
was
love
my,
that song.
I think it's the best song of the 20th century.
Really?
That's what I, yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, I love, why do you like that song?
Oh my gosh, the first time I heard it. So, okay. Something to know about me, because I didn't grow up in a family that was super musical or didn't grow up with a lot of music in my life, is that there a lot of these things, other than like the Disney era stuff, is pockmarked by people that I've been with,
mm-hmm,
that have
mm-hmm.
introduced me to music. So like Bill Withers' Lovely Day and like Sam Cooke was part of this like long relationship of someone that I loved very, very much and who I'm still love, but like we had to go our separate ways because for whatever reason. And that was like the first time I had ever heard it, because he was like really into funk and soul, and he had like 500 plus, probably 800 plus records. He's a real...
So
I love that song because it just never... I feel like I always... Things that like give me an emotional reaction every single time I come across them, or like every time I hear that song, I feel like weeping. And I think it's because the relevancy of that song...
Mm-hmm.
Is still, it's like so urgent today. And also like Sam Cooke's death is so sad.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Which was right after he recorded that.
I know.
He didn't even see that released. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like even talking about it. So that song, I feel like even in today, for all days, is so relevant and so urgent. And it's also just such a beautiful song. I mean, he's such an amazing crooner. He's so amazing.
How old were you when you heard it or when you were introduced to it?
I think in my early 20s.
Okay.
Yeah, my early 20s.
I remembered what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
What, when you listen to instrumental music, what kind of instrumental?
Oh, gosh. Sometimes I listen to classical music.
Do you have favorite composers?
This
is actually something I can talk about.
Oh my gosh. I mean there was like a period recently, like in recent history, like a few months ago, I was like obsessed with like violin stuff, like string music.
Oh, can I make a recommendation?
Yeah.
Prokofiev's Second Violin Concerto, Second Movement.
Okay.
You'll have to write that
down. Yeah, you're going to have to write that down.
It's the greatest. I must.
It doesn't roll off the tongue like
Prokofiev?
Mariah Carey does.
No.
I disagree. I think I've listened to it 200 times.
Oh my gosh, you'll have
it's
to send
amazing.
It to me.
All right, I will.
Yeah. I also listen to like hip hop instrumentals, or, you know, I don't even know what the genres are. Like, I'm so. Like, I like Bonobo. Is that how you pronounce?
I don't know.
That's how I say it.
Bonobo?
No.
Bonobo?
Bonobo.
Yeah. He's amazing.
What were you going to say? Sorry.
No.
Is music, though, wrapped up in nostalgia for you?
I think so, yeah.
In productive or counterproductive ways?
I think in productive ways.
Do you consider yourself a nostalgic person?
Yes.
Well, no, I do too. I mean, some people really frown upon kind of...
I am working a lot on letting things go,
mm-hmm.
and like becoming more detached to things, because I think the nostalgia has not been productive. My friend Maddie and I I guess he's not a poet anymore. He's not a productive poet anymore, but we actually met each other in grad school. And he was doing poetry then, but now he's more of a photographer. But we coined a phrase called pre-nostalgia.
Pre-nostalgia?
Where you mourn the end of something before it's even ending.
That sounds really resigned. Okay. Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
No, I mean, I think it's the way that we cope with things, right? Like when you know that, I don't know, like the time that you have with someone is going to end.
Mm-hmm.
You mourn them before they end so that the mourning part isn't as hard. Like the actual moment of it isn't as intense. I think it's actually a really cheap way to not live in the moment and mm-hmm. to not actually honor the people that you're with because, yeah. But we wanted to do like a whole entire poetry like project on pre-nostalgia, which never happened because how do you even talk about that?
The way you just did. I think that's interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Well, it also, it reminds me when you said you listen to a lot of the music you listen to it because it's nostalgic. It kind of makes sense that you would listen to that for working because it would open up kind of a big emotional thing that maybe you need to be in.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I guess it depends. So I've done a couple things. So I was a part of this blog called Backwards Blog, which is that I'm not writing for anymore, but my friend is still running it. And I did a couple things where like I would dig into what a song or like a kind of music would bring up.
You did a Bill Withers thing on that, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. And then
we can link to that.
And then I also did one on the Fugees.
Yeah. There's just a Warren Hill book just came out.
Did it?
Yeah. I don't know if it's any good, but it was reviewed in the New York Times.
Oh my gosh.
The score.
Yes.
Yes.
The score is like such a great CD. That was like the moment where I thought I was cool. So you know something you said you're not very cool? I was like not very cool. I was not very cool. And then when my mom finally let me, because she actually bought the score because of that one cover, Killing Me Softly, that Lauryn mm-hmm. Hill did. Mm-hmm. Because that was actually like a song, I think.
Roberta Flack.
By Roberta Flack. And my mom, like talking about nostalgia, remembered that song when she lived in Saigon in Vietnam.
Oh, damn. Wow. So that's interesting. Yeah.
And like really loved that song. And then so when the Lauryn Hill cover, the Fugees cover came out, she loved it so much that she actually, even despite the parental warning label on the CD, like let me listen to it.
Yeah.
And so that was how I got access to that CD, was because she loved that song so much because of nostalgia.
And this is high school. I mean, that
no,
that
this is still.
This came out.
Yeah, no, I think that it was like
came
the
out in
same.
Like 96, 96,
yeah, this
95.
Was still
yeah.
like the same. Gosh, like, I think I picked a lot of music, like a lot of songs or music from that time period, 96.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well,
so I was
formative
like,
years.
Yeah, I was like 12. Yeah. You know, I just like would blast it. I thought it was so hard. I loved the music. It wasn't that I didn't love it. I was like, oh yeah, this is rap.
But I mean, you think of your nostalgia as basically a healthy thing.
No, I don't think of it
yeah,
as a healthy
because
thing.
I've talked with people about nostalgia, and I think there's a difference between dwelling in the past and being nostalgic, and I think the former I can do more than the latter, but it can be challenging. I mean, you don't live in the present, but it's something that you acknowledge. Some people are just, I guess just knowing people that they're so like, no, I never look back, no regrets, all those types of things.
I also don't think that that's healthy either.
Yeah. I mean, there's a balance, I guess, but.
I don't actually understand why you see nostalgia as unhealthy unless like you're sitting in it all day dreaming of the past, which I don't think you are.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've done a lot of work to dismantle that, including like some meditation work and some like deep diving work. Here's the thing. Like, I think I've loved, like I still love every single partner that I've ever had. Mm-hmm.
So then if it's wrapped up,
even if I know that I would never return back to that relationship, like, even if I know that that's never going to happen. And I'm like very firm on it. Like it just, you know, like I know, but there's like still, like I just have so much love for those people. That sometimes like, I don't, what is it? It's like, it's a little bit like, I don't know. How do I explain it? It's kind of, you're sort of spinning. You kind of spin, you know?
Within nostalgia or what do you mean?
Yeah.
Spinning?
Well, I mean like spinning. Yeah. In nostalgia where like those feelings sometimes will start projecting
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like on people that are currently in your life. Right.
Well, that's can be hazardous.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm impressed that, I mean, some of the breakups must have been a little hard, and I'm impressed that you can still feel love.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually...
And still listen to the music that they, like, I would think most people would be like, done with that album. I'm amazed.
I mean, I'm like that. I mean, I try really? Not be scorched earth, but I don't listen to certain albums because yeah. they're introduced really? To me by certain partners or...
Oh my gosh.
I think for most people it's hard, it would be painful.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't, like, throw your stereo out the window if I heard it, but I don't choose to put it on.
Well, I actually like, I wish more people were like you, Jenny, because it's always weird when you break up with someone because you've been so close for so long and then suddenly you're sort of pretending it didn't exist or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No. I mean, the Sam Cooke song and the Bill Withers, I mean, Bill Withers' Lovely Day is like my favorite song
ever.
Probably ever. And mm-hmm. then Stevie Wonder's like Sir Duke. Because both of those are like, I think for me, like they make me feel like I want to put my like hands, like my arms in the air, which I'm actually doing right now, but you can't see because I'm on radio. Mm. Like I love those songs and those are like such gifts. And those two songs in particular are definitely from a previous relationship, which was part of my formative years. You know, I was with this person for 8 years.
Yeah, that's a while. Yeah,
yeah, it was a long time. And he was a gift, you know, but we also, for different reasons, like wanted really fundamentally different things. And that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, you know, and the music is an absolute gift. I actually think I gifted the Bill Withers Menagerie record to a guy that I was dating.
To get rid of it?
No. It was
she
just
means
like,
introduced, right?
Yeah, I introduced it to him. Did because you? I think it's just, I don't know, it's such a beautiful song.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really exuberant song.
Do you stay in touch with your like previous partners?
Yes, some.
Some, yeah.
But not this, not the 8 year one.
Right.
That's a while.
Yeah, it was a long time. It was also like 5 years ago that we broke up. But it just, it's still.
But
it's,
things are still wrapped up, even if it was, it can be 50 years ago. I mean, you yeah. still associate sounds or, yeah. yeah.
I mean, and time is like such a construct.
Sure.
It like doesn't, it's not linear.
Well, no,
I mean,
that's
we treat
true,
it, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We treat it as linear, but it's not. And so I think, you know, I think like returning. So I guess back to the discussion around like whether or not nostalgia is productive or not productive. I think it's productive if you can, if you're actually so present in your own nostalgia that you can actually trace back where the patterns are. And mm-hmm. then you can actually, well, I mean, we'll just like keep to the record groove, right? Or like the record metaphor. Like you can actually like make new grooves
mm-hmm.
even as you're going around and around. And I think that's like a way where you can use nostalgia in a very productive and evolutionary way.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just a victim of your own nostalgia and you're just going through the patterns and you're missing people and it's painful and it's not, then that's really unproductive.
Sure.
So I see. Just to make sure, so you're saying instead of trying to retrace those steps, you make the record slowly bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I didn't think about it like that, but yeah.
That's a
I
nice.
Think
that's
I
a
think,
nice.
What was the last song
end?
You listened to? Yeah. We'll end on that. Do you remember?
What was the last song I listened to? Oh, I'm like really into Hayley Kiyoko right now.
Oh, okay.
She's dope.
Oh, it's a man. I didn't
know. No, Hayley.
She,
she,
I thought you said. She, oh, okay. She,
yeah. She's awesome.
Is she American?
I think she's Asian American, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
You hit her on the YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
I've been on
hit her
YouTube.
On the free YouTube.
I've been on YouTube.
Did you say YouTube?
YouTube.
Oh, yeah, I know
I've
YouTube.
Been on there.
I don't like it because they always play ads. Don't they?
But it's free.
Yeah, what do you mean? It's free. You get to choose.
I hate that. Well, I work really early in the morning, and at our job we have Spotify, but the guy I work with likes YouTube, and I'm like, dude, we've got Spotify. There's no ads, and he keeps putting on YouTube, and every three songs there's like some really annoying ad.
Yeah.
Well, that makes if you have choices.
That was like the worst story to end this.
Are we ending now?
Well, I think we're getting over an hour.
Yeah.
But
well, you're gonna edit this down, right?
No.
What?
This is mostly gonna be it.
You were great. This is a lot of good stories. Is there anything you want to have cut out? Say it on the air, and then
I don't know.
We'll know what you didn't like.
I mean, we'll touch base with you before. Yeah, we were not just gonna.
Yeah, I don't know. Gosh, yeah. I guess like, well, I feel like I was really honest in this piece, so it feels really raw. So like the really neurotic writer part of me is like, oh, we should edit some things out.
I'm exactly the same way, and that's why I used to do a podcast where I edited the hell out of it, and it took. Yeah. So now I'm like, I need to not edit, or this will never continue.
Yeah.
But if you're uncomfortable with anything, we can. We'll edit later if you want.
Yeah.
This is so boring.
This is so boring. All right, out.
You're listening to The Steer, recorded at KBOO Radio, broadcast on dublab.com, hosted by Jeff Alessandrelli and Sonny Bleckinger. For more, see our website at www.the-steer.com. You can download our episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, and anywhere podcasts are found.